If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
All right, welcome to Above the Fold here on Real Talk at 93.3. It's Thursday. The end of the week is near. Almost here, actually. I guess we had a day off from school also today, so they'll go. They should have had a teacher planning day on Friday, and we could add a four-day weekend. I'm your host, Steve Stewart. We're here every Tuesday and Thursday at noon. Thanks for tuning in. You know, Tuesday we set you up for a Leon County Commission meeting of what they were going to cover. So today we'll tell you sort of what happened and what they voted on. Obviously a little bit of an issue with the mask. Still, it was in a late added item to the agenda. We'll get you caught up on that. And there's some back and forth now between County Administrator Vince Long and Governor Ron DeSantis. You know, not sure what to think about sort of how this is being handled. I know that Vince Long, who's the county administrator, came out very quickly a month or so ago and made the decision that if you weren't vaccinated by October 1st, you would lose your job with a couple of very narrow opt-out options. But Governor DeSantis has basically decided that he's going to start fining these local governments $5,000, I think, per employee. I think he started it already. Let's see here. I've got an article I want to read from that talks about the fines. It says here, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis announced this week the state will be imposing $5,000 fines per violation towards cities and local municipalities that implement vaccine mandates for their employers. DeSantis said people that have put in 10, 15, 20 years and now they're just going to get cast aside by some onerous mandate. That is wrong. And so let it be known today, we're going to be enforcing Florida against that. So numerous counties across Florida have doubled down and said they're going to go forward with the vaccine mandate for their employees. The city of Gainesville, Orange County, Florida, Leon County, here we are right here, are the counties that are defying DeSantis. Now, I from what I understand, that in Alachua County, city of Gainesville, there are some lawsuits that have been filed. The Vince Long, the county administrator, released a statement, I guess, on Monday. Unfortunately, and despite the tireless efforts of public health professionals, political rhetoric continues to dangerously exasperate the fear and confusion about vaccinations. In a public health emergency, clarity of information remains critical. This is why it is necessary that I clarify that vaccinations as a condition of employment in Leon County is legal and will remain in effect. We will continue to act responsibly to ensure our operation readiness to respond to the needs of our community and to keep our employees safe. Now, I think that Mr. Long appeared on CNN with Don Lemon to talk about this. So this is becoming, I think that's obviously not really needed other than from a PR perspective. So that, I think, says a little bit about what's going on here. Now, if you get to the basis of the argument, why is the county really doubling down on this and moving forward with this? Well, the administrator, Vince Long, says that we've got to do this so that we can be ready, operationally ready to provide the services that Leon County provides to the county. You know, the issue with that, and that may be true, but I think Mr. Long's going to have, you know, if he was being questioned by his board, I think one of the questions would be, well, wait a minute, we've got five or six other local governments in Leon County that don't view this as a readiness issue. We're talking about the city of Tallahassee, where they don't require vaccine mandates as a condition of employment for their employees, for police officers. The sheriff's department is not requiring vaccine mandates. You look at schools, they're not even requiring vaccine mandates for their teachers. And so you look at other constitutional officers, supervisor of elections, clerk of the court. So when you make this statement that you've got to do this for readiness, then I would think you would have to explain why you're different from the other local governments in Leon County. The other thing is, so do you have any experience that the COVID virus or the COVID pandemic is having an impact on your readiness? What are the numbers? Show us some numbers that say, look, we are in dire need here. We have a problem. And here are the numbers that show we have this problem in Leon County government, and therefore I've got to institute this mandate that it, you know, you can't work here unless you're vaccinated. So, you know, I think there's not a lot of political competition in Leon County. Mr. Long, I don't think, is getting tough questions from the board. Again, Mr. Long is a very accomplished administrator. I think he can handle these questions, but I think it's going to be paramount for those questions to be answered, especially if this moves forward in the legal realm. And then, in fact, it is against the law to do what some of these counties are doing. And then that's going to be an issue. Why weren't these questions asked before? So that very an issue did not come up at the Leon County Commission meeting. Again, like I said, not questions revolving around that. So I wanted to get that out here in front. And then in our next segment, we'll go over the specifics and the nuts and bolts of some of the issues that were dealt with at the Leon County meeting. Mask, the possible bid that requires more than just paperwork to apply. $250,000 to host the World Athletics Cross Country event here in 2026. They talked about that. Give you more update on the renovation of the Amtrak building. I don't know that I've done a good job of explaining that, so we'll get that out there. And then we'll, in the bottom of the hour, we'll pivot to the city agenda for their meeting on Wednesday. I think back to back meetings for the city commission. And so we'll go over a couple of things. They're going to weigh in on another national issue, which, you know, Mayor Daley has been doing on a couple of occasions. And so the city of Tallahassee is going to weigh in on a national issue, which we'll get you up to date on. So bring you some information on fire service fees. I'll just tell you that this item has a $3 million fiscal impact. I'll tell you how that might impact you. Then we'll talk about the Ethics Board's agenda. We've talked about this lobbyist reform, and they are moving along with this. It is not on the city agenda this week or for next Wednesday, but there is a letter that will be submitted to the city of Tallahassee, which is supposedly ironed out some of their questions on the definition of the misuse of office. We'll go over that because I think this is something that is going to be coming to a head. We've talked about it a lot in terms of getting some changes, reforms for how we deal with lobbyists in local governments. So we'll talk about that. And then our last segment, give you an update on the real estate market, some statistics maybe we haven't talked about before, and then also an update on airport traffic as we continue to recover from the impact of the COVID pandemic there in air travel. So a busy Thursday. Sit back and listen. Appreciate you tuning in. We'll be right back after this break.
If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
All right, welcome back to Above the Fold. Above the Fold is brought to you in part by Epps Decorating Center. If you're a homeowner, you should always be looking for ways to increase the value of your home, but it doesn't always have to be a major project. A fresh coat of paint can transform the interior and exterior of your home in a dramatic way. And I recommend you start with a visit to Epps Decorating Center, Tallahassee's premier Benjamin Moore paint retailer. Whether you need interior or exterior paint, high-end or commercial-grade coatings, Epps Decorating Center is ready to serve you. Give them a call at 385-6649. That's 385-6649, and we appreciate their sponsorship. Okay, so the Leon County Commission meeting on Tuesday, coming from the emergency meeting, they, you know, wasn't well-received having that emergency meeting, but they did get an agenda item put up for the Tuesday meeting. And basically what was at stake here was requiring face coverings in Leon County government facilities and requiring face coverings at tourism grant-funded events. In other words, if there was money from Leon County that was involved with a tourism event, then they had to, they were going to vote to see, make those people wear face masks. So basically, this didn't really go anywhere. There was a formal vote on requiring face coverings, and that that did not pass. The motion that was accepted was to strongly encourage the wearing of face masks, and that was 5-2. Chairman Rick Miner and County Commissioner Christian Dozier were the ones in the minority there. They were, I think, would have voted for or did support the mandatory mask in government facilities. So anyway, I think that's beyond us now for a little while. We'll see what happens moving forward with regards to that. The bigger deal, obviously, is the vaccine mandates for condition of employment with the county, which will continue to be in the news. Wanted to touch on the basically the cross. They approved the spending of $250,000 to bid on the World Athletics Cross Country event for 2026, which will be held out at the Appalachian Ridge Park facility. And, you know, they just released a statement unveiling the major improvements to that park. And, you know, it's just amazing. There's a $3 million investment in the Appalachian Regional Park, and that is completed. And so that's good timing. But, you know, there's like 7 upcoming cross-country events from September to December. Looks like they're all college-related. 6 of the 7 are college related, and one of them is a Florida high school state cross country championships. So good news there. I hope maybe it'd be great if we won that bid and got some more publicity for the park, which has done really well. All right, the other thing that was considered was the improvement of the Amtrak building or the renovations. And I wanted to make sure that I explained this correctly. You know, this is rated as a historic place, which puts limits on what can be done there. But the county had a tourism office that was downtown on Jefferson Street. They sold that. And what they're doing is they're taking the proceeds of that sale and they're going to be renovating the Amtrak building. So that will be the permanent relocation of the Division of Tourism and the Visitor Information Center. So that is it's really not a lot of, I shouldn't say a lot of money. It's not a lot of money that they're losing because they've sold their original home for the Division of Tourism and Visitor Information Center. Now they're going to take the proceeds from that and renovate the Amtrak building, which is, again, labeled as historical place of significance. And in conjunction with the project, the city of Tallahassee has a Railroad Avenue improvement project between Gaines Street and FAMU Way, and the goals are enhancing safety, increasing pedestrian connectivity, and just sort of making it look better. So anyway, I wanted to make sure that we had the facts on that. They're not just spending $3.5 million to renovate this building so that it can sit on the, you know, register for historic places. It will be serving a purpose as the home for the Division of Tourism and the Visitor Information Center for Leon County. So that was passed on consent. And then I thought was something that was interesting that they dealt with, and they bring this up, I think, at least once a year, and that is the status of the Leon County real estate portfolio. And I wanted to go through this because, you know, the questions of how much land these local governments own, you know, it's tough to tell if it's a lot because it's a lot when you compare it to what, you know, you or I probably own, but is it a lot compared to other locations? So they've got an item where they update the county commission on the status of this real estate portfolio. And I wanted to read you a line from that analysis from the agenda item, which was, again, this was not a vote was really required. It's just a status update that they're providing information to the elected officials. It says here, as of December 31st, 2020, the end of last year, the county real estate portfolio consisted of 603 parcels totaling 6,455 acres. That's 130 buildings with just short of 2.4 million square feet, 84 buildings with 2.1 million square feet support the daily business of Leon County government and the constitutional officers and other public entities. 25 buildings with 250,000 square feet have long and short-term tenant leases. There are also 21 structures with 20,000 square feet And these are residential, these are primary residential and mobile homes that have been acquired through the failure to pay property taxes. So what happens is the county takes over these properties. Probably not a lot of market for it based on what I'm seeing. Not a lot of market or a lot of saleability for those properties that are taken because of a lack of property taxes. But again, I think it's interesting to look at this. Now, they are landlords in a way. There are Lake Jackson Town Center, which they own off of North Monroe. They rent that out, and they have a 2020 projected rental or actual rental revenue of a little over $200,000 from that project, and that's going to go up in 2021 to $316,000 as I guess the rental go up or get some new tenants. And so anyway, like I said, these are status updates which they give once a year. And also wanted to bring your attention to the other status update they give, and this is now quarterly, is on the performance of Waste Pro. And Waste Pro, as you remember, this was a contract that was a little bit controversial, but part of the rationale for giving this the waste collection contract to Waste Pro was that they would have these quarterly updates, and they would be measuring or comparing their service to some of the previous years when, you know, they had a number of issues that were categorized or measured by requests for service, liquidated damages because there were issues. And so there's a chart they include in the agenda item, and this, and they update this, and you know, it's clear that 2019 was the a very tough year for Waste Pro, and that was part of the issue going into the contract, trying to win that contract. But since then, 2020, there was only 355 instances of liquidated damages with legitimate complaints compared to the previous year of 2,245. So that was down. Now, the status so far this year, over halfway, we're on the same pace as 2020 for both the number of complaints, 100 in with legitimate complaints with liquidated damages at about 180. Again, last year was about 360. And this year, so far, the liquidated damages is about $15,000 compared to $30,000 last year. Now, the liquidated damages, which would cause the problem in 2018 and 2019, was a total of $300,000. So there has definitely been a market improvement in the customer service here for Waste Pro. And again, this is, you know, this is a good management of a contract that was providing some problems. And it seems like they have definitely made improvements. And again, you know, the quarterly updates or the quarterly review of this, I think, holds everybody accountable. And so it's good to see that. All right. So when we get back, what we're going to do is we've got two items we want to talk about: the City Commission agenda for next week, but we're also going to talk about the Ethics Board meeting, which is on Tuesday, and that really coincides with what's going on with the the recent conclusion of one of the federal corruption trials, and also the sentencing, because everybody now is talking about what are we going to do to deal with what happened over the last few years. We had the press conference from Jeremy Matlow. Before that, we've had the Independent Ethics Board making recommendations on how to deal with lobbyists. And so they've got a letter that they've crafted. They're going to get approved on Tuesday to send to the City Commission. We'll go over that letter and outline exactly what they view as some of the challenges and some of the changes that need to be done. And then it's going to be in the City Commission's court. And so we'll detail that when we get back. So stay tuned. You're listening to Above the Fold.
If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
All right, welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. I appreciate you joining us. City Commission meeting on Wednesday, and I'm going through the agenda right now and wanted to, a couple of items I wanted to highlight. First, as a preference to this first item, one of the things that we've had an issue with, and I say we, I think everybody is across the state and probably in a lot of other cities and communities, is everything is starting to become nationalized. We're seeing in our media where you had the traditional local media outlets that were more focused on what was going on locally. Now they're owned by national corporations, and they start trying to infiltrate the news with national stories because they're easier to write. They can be used in different locations without having with much more cost effective. And so the same thing is happening with our political leaders. They're starting to, they're trying to generate political power and virtual signal and, make sure everybody knows where they stand on taking positions on a lot of national issues. And so we've seen that here. This started, got underway with Andrew Gillum here in the city of Tallahassee. If you remember, he was making a lot of appearances on the liberal media, obviously to build up his PR, which actually you could argue that it worked. I mean, he got the Democrat nominee for the gubernatorial race in Florida, ended up losing by only 33,000 votes. But he was on CNN, MSNBC, talking about national issues like Syrian refugees and things of social justice, things of that nature. Well, our new mayor, Mayor John Daley, has done some of the same things. I don't know that he's been on CNN or MSNBC, but he's taken positions on, obviously, some of his hand was forced with the social justice issues and what happened nationwide over the summer. But he's made comments on the Voting Rights Act that is working its way through the U.S. Congress, the John Lewis Voting Rights Act. He's talked about, just wrote an article about the HB1, which is the anti-riot bill, which was passed by the state legislature. Now, I don't really care for that bill either, but I'm not really sure why the mayor is going out of his way to make that an issue. When you've got, I've said this before, I just would like elected officials to focus on our community. It hasn't been an issue here. But the city commission now will again venture into a national issue, and there looks like at their September 8th meeting, which is probably due to what happened out in Texas, the city commission directed the city attorney to prepare a resolution supporting legislative efforts to protect citizens' right to reproductive health care, including abortion. The resolution attached, which is for discussion, is consistent with the type of resolution approved previously by the city commission which involves state and federal legislative priorities. The resolution here is, and you can go see, we'll do a story on this and get the resolution up so people can look at this, but it is, I'll just pick out a couple of whereases. So the resolution of the city commission of the city of Tallahassee, Florida, supporting legislative efforts to protect and strengthen Florida citizens' right to reproductive health care, including abortion. And it says, whereas the ability of women who become pregnant to access safe and legal abortion when they need it is also a critical component of their health and dignity, as well as independence, freedom, and social and economic equality. Whereas abortion is one of the safest medical procedures in the United States, and experts at the National Academies of Science, Engineering, and Medicine published a study in 2018 confirming that scientific evidence consistently indicates that legal abortions in the U.S. are clearly safe. I think that it's something that, again, I wish they would focus on parks and jobs and bringing people together. That's not what we're getting here. This is not sure why they have to weigh in this. They have no friggin' legal authority over any of this. It's a lot like Mayor Daley weighing in on the voting rights bill. Do we have a voting rights issue here in Leon County? Last time I checked, I think, this is the argument is that, that vote is being suppressed. I believe in the last two of the last three or four presidential elections, the turnout in African Americans has been higher than turnout of white Americans. And so I don't think that is indicative of a system that suppressing the vote. But again, you know, this is what we're faced with here is local government is starting to nationalize everything. And, you know, one of the issues that we're going to be following up on is the National Conference or the U.S. Conference of Mayors took a stand on supporting the teaching of critical race theory in K-12 schools. And, you know, again, not sure mayors aren't really connected to the education system. But once again, we have this, you know, this broad statement from mayors. Now, I don't know if Mayor Daley even attended that conference or voted on that resolution. We'll find out. But in it, they didn't even try to hide what critical race theory was. This was an agenda. The resolution that was on the agenda was very clear. And again, we'll have an article up on that momentarily also. So, but this effort by the city, again, is something that's consistent with where we're headed, which is nationalizing everything. Now, something that's more local that they're going to be dealing with is fire service fees. Now, we talked about this previously. This has got, I go through the agenda, I look for fiscal impact information, and this has got a $3 million impact, and this has already been dealt with, but this has to do with an amendment, but it's worth talking about again because the city commission has already passed a resolution which establishes the fire services fee assessments. And rate changes were delayed in 2020 due to the COVID pandemic. On September 19th, 2020, the City Commission approved another resolution which increased the fire service fees and assessments by 15% in fiscal year 2022, with a subsequent increase of 1.5% or the CPI adjustment, whichever is greater, through fiscal year 25. Now, I'm going to go ahead and admit that this is it's a complicated issue here because the county also has to weigh in on this. They have to basically contribute some money to the fire services fund because this is a service that is countywide. This is not paid for by your property taxes. This is an issue that's been going on for years. This was moved out of the property tax fund to a fee. And so the listed fiscal impact is $3 million. And they're going to go ahead and I think they're also going to be doing a fire services study, rate study coming up to develop rates moving forward. But definitely these fees are definitely going up. And so I thought that was important to point out. Now, the other issue I wanted to look at is there is, again, when we look at these numbers, there's a $2.25 million dollar amount for a fiscal impact for the adoption and funding of the Griffin Heights Neighborhood First Plan. Now, they're starting to do this in some of these neighborhoods around the city. I think we saw one of these, but the Frenchtown Revitalization Plan. Now, this one is for Griffin Heights, which, again, is in the Frenchtown area, and it's about $2.2 million, but there's going to be additional money. Additional funding of $4.15 million for future projects will be funded between 2023 and 2026 from the Neighborhood First capital budget. So this Neighborhood First is a category which they're using to take money and invest in neighborhoods. Just give you the broad categories that they're looking at here. The Neighborhood First plan will look at obviously trying to clean up the neighborhoods, community beautification, implementation of an education program on how to inform citizens to report code enforcement issues, cleanup events, assisting residents with home beautification projects. And then there'll be economic development issues addressed and also neighborhood infrastructure, which would be like sidewalks and improving parks. So anyway, $2.2 million. All right, we get back. Our last segment, boy, went by quick. We will tie up some loose ends. Stay tuned. I'm Steve Stewart. You're listening to Above the Fold.
If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
All right, welcome back to Above the Fold. In my excitement over the city commission meeting, I forgot to talk about the Independent Ethics Board letter, and we'll go over that before we get to a couple other things I wanted to mention. So the letter, that they're going to be taken up on Tuesday, and I guess they're looking for approval of this from the Ethics Board so they can send to the city commission. The letter's dated September 21st. But it's a Dear Mayor and Commissioners letter, and they're dealing with a couple of draft ordinances. And one of them, the first draft ordinance, involves four recommendations to change the ordinances that can be adopted without any change to the Tallahassee Charter. And they have to deal with broadening the definition of lobbyists and their regulations. And so I wanted to just go through this because we have talked about this. The first recommendation is says current ordinance defines lobbying as a communication, whether written or oral, by a lobbyist outside of a duly noticed public meeting. The proposed language places the greater emphasis on the definition of a lobbyist as before identifies lobbying as work done by lobbyists, but the new subsection fleshes out the definition and explicitly identifies conduct that would fall under the job description. In other words, you can't just self-identify as a lobbyist if you're or self-identify as not a lobbyist if you're doing a lobbyist work. So that's going to be basically the idea there is to go ahead and say anyone that's being paid by someone looking to influence local government is a lobbyist. I don't care what you call yourself as, you know, a consultant or a PR person. And so that's going to be one of the ordinance changes. The other one is... it says they're going to register these require contact logs. It says the board recommends that all covered individuals as defined by certain sections be required to ensure that those lobbying him or her or any particular issue is properly registered with the office of the city treasurer clerk. It also mandates that contact logs between covered individuals and lobbyists. The duty to maintain and submit said logs would fall upon the lobbyist, and such log would be required to be filed no later than 3 business days following the lobbying activity. Now, that's interesting because I didn't know that or hadn't noted that before, and that's that the duty to maintain the logs will fall upon the lobbyist. So it also is going to ban the payment to lobbyists based on contingency fees. In other words, if you get something done, you'll get a percentage of whatever that, you know, whatever you got done. If you get a $3 million project approved, then you're going to get a 10% contingency fee. They're going to outlaw the contingency fees. That's something that is done in a number of areas. So the board also, and this is where I think it's going to get a little bit dicey. The board also, the ethics board, wants to expand their jurisdiction. The proposed amendment adds lobbyists appearing before the city to the person subject to the board's jurisdiction. Additionally, the proposed language amends the municipal charter to add to the enumerated powers of the board the power of judicial review over penalties assessed and disciplinary action imposed by the city treasurer clerk. This is where the city is going to get a little nervous because they don't like giving up power, but we'll have to keep an eye on this and see how that goes. But again, this is the reason why I bring this up is it's important for you to know this is coming to a head. After the federal public corruption trial and with JT Burnett and now the sentencing of Scott Maddox, people have been putting off doing anything because they've used the trials as, and rightfully so, to wait until that is over to deal with any of these issues. This is where we're headed. It's going to be most of it's going to be focused on lobbyists and how they're dealt with. The question though to be asked here is, you know, are we going to go ahead and expand this to the school board, to Leon County government, to the CRA, to Blueprint, and in addition to the city of Tallahassee? So it'll be interesting to see this discussion because I think it's going to take place over the next 2 to 3 or 4 city commission meetings. Okay, wanted to pivot to the airport numbers for July. We've reported on this. You know, we started showing the numbers for 2019, 2020, and 2021 because when you compare the monthly number in 2021 to 2020, you don't really get a lot of context because 2020 was down so bad because of the pandemic. So you start comparing it to, 2019. And so if you look at the traffic from July, 63,000 passengers, that's enplanements and deplanements, is what they registered, 63,800 compared to 71,000 in 2019. So we're 10% off of the 2019 number in July. However, the if you look at the year to date numbers, which would be January July, we're at 321,000 passengers. In 2019, that was at 491. So we're got off to a slow start in January and February and March, again, still due to the pandemic. So we were down, it looks like, 34% for the calendar year to date. So we have improved. That number is at 10% for July. So obviously it'd be great to get that to zero and start growing again. But we'll, as the economy, starts to pick back up, and, what we're not really seeing here in the July numbers probably would be hit in August would be the impact of the Delta variant, and that the new increase in cases. So we'll see if that slows down our recovery on the airport side. Now, want to pivot again to real estate. Now, we've talked about this, the July numbers, but there's some new numbers here that I wanted to talk about. We'll go ahead and recap sort of what happened in July. Look, continued double-digit growth in July in the monthly, and if you start looking at the annual comparisons, July of this year, 394 homes sold. Last year, 317. That's a 24% increase. The average price in July of this year, $323,000. Last year, $280,000. That's a 15% increase. Now, if you look at the annual rate, that's the sum of 12 months of transactions, 3,724 sales. That is an 18% increase over this time last year when it was at 3,157. And then if you look at the average annual price, as of July, the 12-month annual price was $310,000 of a sold existing home. That's 13.8% above the average price 12 months ago. So all these four categories that we talked about there are double-digit increases. And so if you go to Talos Reports, you can see the report on this. And you can see that it looks like, so we'll count this out, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 consecutive months of increases in transactions. That began in July of, actually August of last year. And so, the market for residential real estate is continuing to boom, and again, you can get the specifics at TalosReports.com. Now, two numbers I wanted to talk about that we have started including in this report is the inventory of homes, which tells how many homes are listed for sale. Now, in July, there were 727 homes listed for sale, and that is 3.3% lower than a year ago when there was 768. Now, that is so not a lot of change there. But inventory is a big deal because, the wider selection you have, the more competitive it is, obviously, the better pricing you're going to get. Now, the other stat we want to look at is homes. Homes are selling faster now than they were a year ago. The average days on the market in July of 2021 for the homes sold in July of 2021 was 22 days on the market. 1 year ago, it was approximately 49 days. So that's a 50% decrease in the average days that you can consider, that you can expect your home to be on the market for. So that is, again, sort of consistent with what you see when you're driving through neighborhoods, homes, those signs don't stay up long. You usually see that under contract sign pop up there. So the question is, how long is this going to continue? Obviously, it is good for a number of segments of the population. Is it good for first-time home buyers trying to get into homes? You know, one of the things I've always noted is that, look, prices are going up, but when you compare it to other locations in Florida, Tampa, Orlando, Miami, and Jacksonville, when you look at the quality of life and the cost of homes, I think Tallahassee is probably still a pretty good bargain, even though the prices have gone up so much. So anyway, all right, that's all the time we have today. I hope you have a great weekend. I hope FSU does well so we can get off to a better start next week. But anyway, stay safe and have a good weekend. I'll talk to you Tuesday.
I can see all obstacles in my way. Gone are the dark clouds that had me blind. It's gonna be bright.